You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada.
Today on CICK News, as the BC Legislature resumes the spring sitting in Victoria, we check in with Forest Minister Ravi Parmar. He recently toured BC's Northwest, meeting with ministry workers, local municipalities, industry partners, and locals affected by recent mill closures in the north. Forestry has been the backbone of BC's economy since its inception, but it is currently in a state of disarray with at least four permanent mill closures in BC in 2024, with several more curtailments. Can BC's new forestry minister turn the ship around and reinvigorate the forest economy here in BC? We'll discuss that and more coming up. But first, a report from my colleague Pam Hassan about the upcoming nominations for the Smithers Chamber of Commerce Business Awards. Stay with us.
The Community and Business Excellence Awards are hosted annually by the Smithers District Chamber of Commerce. These awards provide an opportunity to spotlight outstanding businesses, entrepreneurs, and nonprofit organizations serving the community of the Bulkley Valley. You can nominate a business, entrepreneur, or not-for-profit today until Friday, February 28th at 4:30 p.m. Go to smitherschamber.com and you'll find a link to the 2025 CBE Awards. Or you can follow the Smithers District Chamber of Commerce on Facebook or Instagram, where you will also find the link to nominate. I'm speaking with Sheena Miller today about the upcoming awards and why you should nominate a business in the community of the Bulkley Valley.
Sheena Miller, Executive Director of the Smithers District Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Center.
Okay, so Sheena, we're coming up to the Chamber Business Excellence Awards. Let's talk about what's new this year and then what's the driver in the community to make a nomination.
This is the perfect opportunity to support the local and regional economy. Mm-hmm. So the Chamber says this messaging all the time. But you know what? More than ever, it's easy to actually fill in a nomination and spread some recognition to an amazing business who deserves to be highlighted. Mm-hmm. And so right now, there's so many things happening to the South with tariffs and different things that are impacting our economy. And really, again, a simple call to action is just really to nominate a business and spread that awareness that, that's a simple thing that we can all get behind. And it doesn't cost money and it's not a high overhead. It's a really low hanging thing to just nominate a business. There's 15 awards that you can look at. And new to this year, we have a Resource Mining Excellence Award.
Absolutely. Are there industries or businesses that people might not realize are part of the Chamber?
Yeah, that's a really good question. The Chamber is so neat. It makes up over 18 different sectors. And we have everything from home-based businesses, so, you know, an entrepreneur that's the owner of their company, mm-hmm. all the way up to nonprofits, to other service groups. And we even have a public service award. So someone that's doing a great job in public service can be nominated. So really, when we think of the Chamber Awards, it's not just the Chamber, it's absolutely the greater community. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's the Community and Business Excellence Awards. And we just really ask people to think about who inspires you, who improves your quality of life, who is doing something amazing and going that extra mile in our area, including we have some members in Houston and members in Witsat and all the way out to the Kispioch. Mm-hmm. So we're really celebrating all of these members and encouraging unique nominations. Mm-hmm. We sometimes see the same nominations year after year. And so we actually have a little bit of a best practice where you can't be nominated and win an award 2 years in a row. We recognize that some people provide such outstanding service. They do get nominated every single year. There are those businesses, and we're grateful for them. They're amazing. But in terms of that committee, they are encouraged to, again, look for unique nominations and try to represent all sectors to see more inclusive voting. Mm-hmm.
And that's the voting committee, that's the members of the Chamber Board. And then is it also business owners?
Yeah. So we have a handful of business owners. We have a couple of public service workers. And then we have two judges that support that nomination process that are out of this community. So they're two non-biased judges that don't know any of the businesses. And they don't know really anything that's happening. They don't have a very good pulse on Smithers. And so we find them at opposite ends of Northwest BC. Yeah. So all they will see is the written descriptions of the business owners. They don't know who the business owners are, mm-hmm. or who's nominated.
So the Chamber supports business. It has members, business owners, members of the Chamber. And then anyone can buy a ticket. A lot of these business owners, they want to buy a table or they want to buy a ticket to go to the actual event. But that ticket does come at a kind of a high cost. So can you tell me how that ticket, how does it come back into the community?
Yeah, so there's two ways to answer that. The first thing is that event costs are so high that you can't even organize a gala now without pricing a ticket at about $100. Mm-hmm. So we're working really hard right now to try and get the ticket cost down from $150, for example. And so we're trying to find sponsors and different community partners that are going to help us to reduce the prices. But really, at the end of the day, you can't put on a gala or a high-level event to this caliber without the high event costs. Mm-hmm. The rising costs of business in every element is going to be impacted with this event. But having said that, we recognize that there are community members that can't afford to go. So we have some tickets reserved for people that can't afford to go. And we find sponsors that will cover that cost. So we've actually never turned anyone down yet. So anyone that's ever shown interest, we've found a way to find them a ticket. Mm-hmm. And then another point to that is we are a nonprofit organization. We have no sustainable annual funding. And so this is actually supposed to serve as a fundraiser for the Chamber of Commerce. And we are hopeful that maybe a small percentage of the ticket fees might go towards the chamber at the very end after we covered all of our costs. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see if that's the case when, again, the back end hard costs are so high. But we are hopeful that we'll retain a little bit as part of a fundraiser, and that helps keep the chamber's lights on year round to actually continue to do the service work and provide the value proposition that we do. So it is a circular economy in the sense that when you support the chamber, it just goes right back out to the community. Mm-hmm. And like every nonprofit, we need to keep our lights on right now. And so we have to find creative ways to fundraise. And the auction element of the gala has always been there for maybe 20, 30 years or even longer. Mm-hmm. So it's an important part of our annual fundraising for our budget.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much. And I really hope that we see everybody out. And if anyone has any questions, feel free to pop into the Chamber of Commerce office. You can go on our website, mm-hmm. as well as social media. There's different ways to connect with us to ask questions and get involved.
And the nomination form is open until 4:30 on Friday the 28th?
Yeah, 4:30 the 28th. We might extend it. Some years we do. But for the most part, we hope to get as many nominations in as possible. Again, we just hope people will nominate, get involved, and reach out to us if they need a gala ticket.
That was Sheena Miller, Executive Director for the Smithers Chamber of Commerce, speaking with CICK reporter Pam Hassan. Coming up next, my conversation with BC Forest Minister Ravi Parmar.
It's Ravi Parmar. I'm BC's Minister of Forest, and I'm actually joining you from beautiful Agassiz here in the Lower Mainland, Fraser Valley, in British Columbia.
Great, Ravi. Thanks so much for being with us here on CICK News. Of course, I had heard that you were in our neck of the woods here a little while ago for a tour of Northwest BC. Maybe you can tell me a little bit about why you undertook that tour.
Yeah, you bet. When I became BC's Minister of Forests, I learned fairly quickly that real work happens in community. And so as much as I wanted to spend time early on in my tenure as minister, engaging with the public service and getting briefed up, I felt that it was important to be on the ground, really talking about the three pillars and priorities that I have as minister: restoring confidence in the sector, standing up and delivering for workers, and honoring our commitments to biodiversity and to reconciliation. And that's why I started off a two-week tour that took me from Terrace to Smithers, Burns Lake, all through those small communities to Prince George. Weekend in the Caribou and Williams Lake in Quesnel, and the backup in Prince George for the Natural Resources Forum. What an opportunity it was for me to be on the ground, engaging with community members, with First Nations leaders, learning about the issues, but also the opportunities that are out there. And it was quite exciting to be on the ground having those conversations, and now to be able to take that work and those learnings back to Victoria to work on those three commitments and those three pillars that I have.
No doubt. Minister, you take on one of the ministries that obviously has seen some challenges in recent years, specifically a number of mills closing. Also, we've seen the deferrals of old growth, getting pressure from certain groups to allow old growth to remain as it is. What are you wanting to tackle first, and what did you hear from folks that you met with on your tour?
Well, look, I think folks are looking for a balance. I think they're looking for us to be able to ensure that we can have a strong, robust, and sustainable forest sector for the next 100 years. I learned very quickly in my time in politics from the local leaders of the Sauk, Pachedut, and Chiyanu First Nations in my community of Vancouver Island that we have to start thinking 7 generations ahead with our policy decisions and with our work as government. And that was really important for me to be able to take to these conversations is I'm in this role, but I'm thinking about the next Minister of Forests 100 years from now and how he's going to be engaging with industry leaders, with First Nations, with local government leaders, and everyone that makes up this sector. And so, without a doubt, there's a lot of challenges. Just the Trump tariff itself makes forestry very challenging for the foreseeable future. But I think there's also a lot of opportunities as well in the value-added space to be able to see First Nations, Indigenous peoples taking a larger role in forestry, and in particular forest stewardship, since they have been stewards of this land since time immemorial. I think brings me a lot of comfort that I can really get the sector back on its feet and also position it so 100 years from now it can be strong, sustainable, and vibrant. And we are talking about a forest sector 100 years from now.
These are some pretty tough challenges. As you mentioned, we've seen mill closures right in our neck of the woods here, one in Houston, a Canfor mill. We've also recently seen a value-added mill that made cans just on the west side of Whitsett, the community of Whitsett, the Seton Mill shut down. This obviously is got a lot of people in these small communities. I'm very concerned about the future, their livelihoods, their jobs. What in the short term are you able to offer some of these folks who may have lost their jobs at these mill closures? What can you offer them in the short term? How can they be hopeful of what comes next?
My commitment to them is going to be that I'm going to be on the ground in their communities, engaging with their people, engaging with their leadership at the local government and First Nations level, and finding ways to be able to grow forestry in the communities. I've spent quite a few hours in Houston as part of my trip. I was the first forest minister probably in almost 2 decades to actually step foot in Houston and have difficult conversations with the community members there. I took a drive around the old Canfor mill that shut down and heard the frustrations from the community around why is it that logging is happening in and around Houston, but those logs are not being processed locally. It was important for me to be able to hear that and take that back to my team. It's why we're doing a review of BC timber sales as an example. And part of that review is making sure that we are finding ways to process logs and create more jobs for contractors and for those in working in mills closer to home to where those logs are being harvested. I'm hopeful that through the BCTS review and a number of other steps that I've taken in the past 2 months as minister, people are going to start seeing a change. But also recognize that 2025 is going to be a challenging year for the forest sector. The Trump tariff, in addition to duties going up, we'll find out in a couple of weeks what the percentage point is, but we expect there to be a double-digit increase to softwood lumber duties. We could be looking at upwards of 50 to 55% increase, which is substantive, and that would be absolutely devastating to the forest sector. It's why I'm heading to California in a couple of days to be in Sacramento to meet with lawmakers, to meet with American media outlets, as well as the forest sector down there, lumber mills, to talk about the fact that it makes absolutely no sense to me why at a time when California, in particular, a state that's been hit hard by wildfires, is going to be looking at 40 to 50% additional cost to be able to rebuild a home because of the Trump tariff and these softwood lumber duties going up. And so I'm going to be hopeful that the California home builders who have already come out very vocal against the Trump tariff and others will join me in making the case to the president that now is the time to get to the table and make a deal on softwood lumber once and for all, and hopefully find a way to be able to address his concerns. But in particular, he often says we don't need Canada's trees. He's dead wrong. We export about 60% of our product, our lumber, to the United States because the U.S. needs it. And just go and look at California. Go and talk to the folks in North Carolina that are going through rebuilds because of hurricanes. They need our lumber, and they know it.
Indeed.
Just the last thing for you, Minister, before I let you go. A lot of what you're talking about, in particular, you know, we've seen a lot of conglomerates come in and take over the smaller operators. From the folks that I've spoken with in the forest industry, they would love to see adjacency reinstated, where the logs that are cut, felled in their area are stay there in the community, are milled in the community. Could we see that come back under your tenure?
Yeah, appurtenancy is the term that was removed by the BC Liberals in 2003. It was something that John Rustad supported when he was a member of that party. And look, we're exploring all options. There's unfortunately some unintended consequences if we were to just bring it back in like it was brought in, or rather like it was taken out previously. There's a lot of mills that, including the one in Smithers, the West Fraser Mill, that could potentially be impacted by that. But we're going to find ways to be able to create more jobs closer to home. We're going to find ways to ensure that those local logs that are being harvested in places like Houston and Fraser Lake provide job opportunities for people on the ground as well. And so I'm interested in exploring those ideas. And it's why I've asked a guy like Brian Frankel to sit on my review of BC Timber Sales as part of the expert task force. He understands these issues as a city councillor. And he knows this region very well, and I think we'll be able to bring a great perspective of finding ways to be able to create more good-paying jobs for local community residents.
Okay, Minister, I think that's all the time we have, so I'll leave it there for now. But thank you so much for your insight and your time, and I'm sure we'll speak again.
Oh, you bet. I'll be up there again soon enough, maybe when it's not negative 30. But for sure, thanks so much, Dan. Take care.
That was BC's Forest Minister, Ravi Parmar.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or check us out on the web at smithersradio.com. CICK News has been made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to my colleague Pam Hassan and all of our roving journalists, I'm Daniel Messick. Thanks for listening.
Learn more about CICK? Visit us at smithersradio.com. Yeah, .com.